Welcome to BioTime, a podcast to help you pass high school biology and understand the science of life. My name is Chris, and I'm your host today. Hey guys, today we're going to be going over reception, the first step in cell signaling. We're going to review how the receptors work, and we'll also touch up on the three main types of cell surface receptors, which are G protein coupled receptors, tyrosine kinases, and ion channel receptors. So before we dive right in, let's quickly discuss what cell signaling is. Cell signaling is the process where a cell receives a signal and then relays a message onto a protein, enzyme, or other structure to act upon the message. So in our case here, reception is the first step of this cell signaling process, and it's the step where the cell accepts a signal given to it. On our cells, there's a wide variety of receptor proteins that will allow for certain signaling molecules to bind to it. In case you don't know what signaling molecules are, these signaling molecules are the molecules that attach to receptors to deliver a message. And signaling molecules can often be referred to as ligands. And for the sake of vocabulary, ligand is just a formal term for a molecule that binds to another molecule. And in our case here, a signaling molecule is binding to a receptor, making the signaling molecule a ligand. All right, enough on the vocab part. Signaling molecules are very specific, and they each bring with them a different response. They could be requesting for synthesis of a specific protein or for the catalysis of an enzyme. When a signaling molecule decides to bind to a receptor, the receptor will often undergo a conformational change. This is where the receptor changes shape in response to the binding of a molecule. Just to remind you of the big picture, reception is the process where a signaling molecule with a message in hand binds to a ligand, and this binding allows for the ligand to pass forward its message to the cell. Anyways, that's the big picture for you guys, so now let's dive into the details on the interaction between signaling molecules and receptors. There are two places a signaling molecule can bind. The first is on the cell surface, and the second is binding on the inside of the cell. Let's first discuss binding on the outside, or in other words, binding to the plasma membrane. If a signaling molecule binds to any receptor on the outside of the plasma membrane, it is referred to as a cell surface receptor. Most of the signaling molecules that choose this method of binding from the outside are often water-soluble or polar. As remember, a cell's plasma membrane is composed of a double lipid bilayer, meaning that polar substances will have a lot of trouble passing through. Water-soluble molecules are polar, so they will be unable to pass through this membrane. This means that these signaling molecules that are polar will simply have to remain outside of the cell and conclude their businesses there. Alright, let's discuss the three main types of cell surface receptors. The first is a G protein coupled receptor, the second is a receptor tyrosine kinase, and the third is an ion channel receptor. And before I explain all of the details on each receptor, I recommend that you go online and search up the receptor name and look at pictures of them so it'll be a little easier to understand. And there's images online from the Campbell biology textbook, and they're really great. And they're super easy to understand, so I recommend those. Alrighty, let's start by discussing the G protein coupled receptors. This is often abbreviated to GPCR. As for the structure of this G protein coupled receptor, this is a transmembrane receptor, meaning that it extends the entire thickness of the cell membrane and is therefore in contact with the extracellular environment and the cytoplasm. So basically, it's touching the outside of the cell and the inside of the cell. Its most important structural feature is the alpha helices that it is composed of. In your mind, you can picture these helices to look like the coils of a spring. The end of the spring in contact with the extracellular environment, or the outside, will be the area for signaling molecules to come and bind. The loops on the coil on the cytoplasmic side, or inside of the cell, will act as binding sites for these things called G proteins, which we will discuss in just a moment. As in the name, this is called a G protein coupled receptor, so we can already see the importance of this G protein that's already in the name. This G protein coupled receptor by itself cannot be fully functional. It also needs the help of a G protein and an enzyme to work together. And so now that we understand this basic structure of this GPCR and the extra components that it needs, let's go through a step-by-step on how this receptor actually works. So first, a signaling molecule will bind to the G protein-coupled receptor, and this binding of a signaling molecule causes a conformational change to occur on the receptor. In case you don't remember what a conformational change is, it's when a protein's shape changes due to the binding of an object. Anyways, this conformational change allows an inactive G protein to now have a place on the receptor to bind. But prior to binding to the G protein coupled receptor, the G protein is in an inactive state. But what determines whether or not a G protein is active or inactive is whether or not it's carrying a GDP or a GTP. Carrying a GDP means that the G protein will be inactive. Carrying a GTP means that you are active. You can think of this GDP and GTP as basically ADP and ATP, as they're very, very similar structures. But anyways, back to the main point here, which is that now with this signaling molecule binded and a conformational change caused by this binding, the G protein will now bind to the receptor. And anyways, this binding tells the G protein to activate. So the G protein will now swap out its GDP and attach a GTP to it. As remember, a GTP on a G protein means that you are activated. Okay, the second step is now that this G protein has been activated due to the binding of the signaling molecule, this G protein will now detach from our GPCR, and it's going to go find this enzyme called adenylyl cyclase, and it's going to go to this adenylyl cyclase and activate it. The activation of this enzyme leads to the creation of cyclic AMP. Cyclic AMP is a second messenger that will then go on to contact a certain protein or enzyme to induce a cellular response. In case you don't know what a secondary messenger is, an analogy for the secondary messenger would be like delivering a package to the postal office. So you drop off the package to the postal office, and that makes you the signaling molecule because you're initiating, you're bringing out this message. But the post office then delivers the package for you to your friend so that your friend can use this package for whatever reason or whatever you sent them. But the post office is the middleman in this situation. They're the ones who are here to help you relay a message, and this makes them the secondary messenger. The secondary messenger is really just something that is given a message and helps to relay it onward. All right, well, enough about this secondary messenger. Let's move on to the third and final step. And just as a quick refresher, previously the G protein was binded to the adenylyl cyclase, and then the adenylyl cyclase created the cyclic AMPs. And since that's all done, we are now able to have the G protein disassociate from the adenylyl cyclase. And with this G protein unattached from the adenylyl cyclase, it's going to want to deactivate because its job has been done. The G protein's role was to simply attach the adenylyl cyclase and allow it to make cyclic AMP. So its job is done, and it's going to deactivate, by swapping its GTP out for a GDP. As remember, having a G protein with a GDP means that it is in an inactive state. All right, so that wraps it up for the G protein coupled receptors. Now let's move on to the second type of surface receptor proteins, which are the receptor tyrosine kinases. These receptor tyrosine kinases are often abbreviated to RTK. This RTK is a transmembrane receptor, just like the G protein coupled receptor that we discussed earlier. And if you want to picture this receptor in your head, it looks like a long rod with three binding sites on the bottom. Tyrosine kinases actually work together in pairs. So the role of tyrosine kinases is to add phosphates to tyrosine. Here's a useful piece of knowledge for you guys, which is that whenever you hear the word kinase, it means the transfer of phosphates. So just know that whenever you hear this term, all you have to know is that a phosphate is being added onto another molecule or structure. All right, so tyrosine kinases are very useful, as with just one tyrosine kinase, you can get a very large reaction. That's what sets tyrosine kinases apart from other types of receptors. Because basically with just one ligand binding, you will be able to get multiple other responses to occur with only one ligand binding. And this contrasts a previously discussed G protein coupled receptor, as the G protein coupled receptor is only able to deal with one enzyme at a time. So that's why the tyrosine kinase is so special, because it can deal with multiple other products at a time. It can deal with multiple enzymes at a time and proteins. So anyways, a very important feature of tyrosine kinases is that they work together in pairs, and we'll discuss this very soon. Alrighty, now let's go over a step-by-step on how tyrosine kinases actually function. First, a signaling molecule will bind to the receptors of the tyrosine kinase. And remember that we have two tyrosine kinases, and the binding of the signaling molecules to the tyrosine kinases will cause them to move closer together. And this process where the tyrosine kinases move closer together is called dimerization. Alrighty, the second step is that ATPs will arrive and drop off phosphates at each binding site of the tyrosine kinase. As remember, there are three binding sites on each tyrosine kinase, so together there are six required phosphates in total. And the attachment of these phosphates helps to phosphorylate the tyrosine. In case you don't know, phosphorylation is the process of adding a phosphate to something. So now with the phosphates attached, the tyrosine kinase is able to activate. And now onto the third and final step, which is that relay proteins will now sense that the tyrosine kinase has been activated, so they will go and bind to the phosphorylated tyrosine. These relay proteins that just attached will now drift off to go induce cellular response. That pretty much covers it for tyrosine kinases. But now let's discuss the third and final type of cell surface receptors, which are ion channel receptors. These ion channel receptors are often gated, so we call them ligand-gated ion channels. This gate will only open if a ligand or signaling molecule binds to it. As it says in the name, this channel will allow ions to enter, like Na+, which is sodium, or Ca2+, which is calcium. Remember that the plasma membrane is semi-permeable, so ions will not be able to just freely pass through. They have to have a channel that will allow ions to enter. And these ligand-gated ion channels are really important, as this is the way that ions will find a way to enter. Also, ligand-gated ion channels play an essential role in nerve function. Okay, let's discuss the step-by-step process. It's actually quite relatively simple compared to the PAS2 receptors. First, a ligand will bind to the ligand-gated ion channel, causing the gate to open. Second, the opening of the gate allows an influx of ions to enter, and this influx will continue as long as the signaling molecule remains intact with the ion channel. Once in the cell, ions will be able to induce cellular response. And the third and final step, once the ligand disassociates from the receptor, the gate will close. Okay, so now that we've discussed all of the cell surface receptors, all the receptors that are used on the outside of the cell, let's discuss how the receptors function on the inside of the cell. In order to pass through the plasma membrane to reach a receptor on the inside of a cell, a molecule will need to be nonpolar. Some examples of signaling molecules that fit this criteria are steroid hormones, thyroid hormones, and nitric oxide. These molecules will be able to diffuse across the membrane and attach to a protein or enzyme, inducing a reaction. And here's an example of how molecules bind in the inside of the cell. And for this example, we will use testosterone. And testosterone is a type of steroid hormone. So steroid hormones will travel around our bodies via the bloodstream. And once this hormone finds the cell it's looking for, the hormone will then diffuse through the plasma membrane and then bind to a receptor protein. This now activated receptor protein will enter the nucleus of the cell and turn on the genes that control specific male sex characteristics. As remember, the hormone that we're talking about right now is testosterone, which is very, which deals with male characteristics. All right, so we have reviewed quite a lot. So let's go over a quick recap of everything we have discussed. Reception is the first part of a three-step process in cell signaling. It is the step where a signaling molecule binds to a receptor, sending a message to the cell to induce cellular response. Binding can occur either on the outside of the cell or the inside of the cell. There are three types of cell surface receptors. The first is G protein coupled receptors. The second is tyrosine kinases. And the third is an ion channel receptor. Remember that these are cell surface receptors, meaning that they are only found on the outside of the cell. As for binding on the inside of the cell, signal molecules will be able to simply diffuse across the membrane and bind to a receptor from inside of a cell. That wraps it up for this podcast on the first step of cell signaling, which is reception. Thanks for listening, everyone.